Hey everybody, this is old reliable Dr. Kip Pietrantonio. As usual, not trying to sling any snake oil, just trying to tell you about Audible.com. Audible.com has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. You can get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting www.audibletrial.com/Midwestern. That's www.audibletrial.com/Midwestern. You know, the interesting thing, we always have to read this thing, Keith. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about it is, and then it's like audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
What
is that?
I don't know. There must be some weird exotic subject that's not audiobook, but is, I don't know.
Is that like a speech? Like, could you listen to a speech or something like that?
Maybe it has to do with if you want to learn calculus or if you want to learn a language or something. I don't know.
Oh, do you remember Wuzzy? Or Muzzy from those commercials back in the day.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
These kids are speaking French.
It's like, oh, I do remember that.
Remember that. These kids are speaking French, but they're American.
I do remember that, yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, it's like Muzzy. This is the new Muzzy. You can get Muzzy on, I don't know if you can get Muzzy on Audible.com, but it's kind of like Muzzy.
Yeah, if you only speak English, you should get Audible for the sole purpose of learning a new language.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So it's Audible.com. I always screw that up. Audibletrial.com/Midwestern.
And you can get your free audiobook.
Or you don't have to. We always say that. You can just hang out.
You can just surf audible.com for fun.
But it kicks back some money to the show, which we always appreciate. All right. Start the show. Hit the music. Episode 26 of the Midwestern Social Scientist. This is Dr. Kip Pietrantonio.
And this is Keith McIntosh.
And we are recording live from Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio?
Yeah, I made it sound special.
Second biggest city in the Midwest.
The second biggest city in the Midwest.
City made of gold. The streets are paved with gold.
The Arch City is the nickname.
Really?
Yeah, Arch City.
How come?
Because of the arches in the short north.
I would have thought St. Louis would be the Arch City.
Yeah, you'd be wrong. You would have thought Philadelphia was in the Midwest, but it's not.
I think those arches, I saw some old photographs of Columbus from, I don't know, probably the late 1800s, and they had those arches going across High Street. Yeah.
Well,
so they've been around for a while, is what I'm trying
around.
To say.
Yeah, they've been around. There's a bar called the Arch City Bar. Pretty popular, free advertising for them, I guess.
Yeah, anybody, you know, I was going to say Ohio, anybody in the Midwest should try to get to Columbus.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile. It's a cool city.
Yeah. Travel like Columbus to Columbus.
You don't have to go as far as Christopher did.
And you don't have to rape or pillage anybody. We'd actually prefer if you didn't.
Yeah, we'd prefer if you didn't. If you come to Ohio, please keep your raping and pillaging to a minimum.
Yeah, just keep it to a minimum. We actually have a guest today.
Very special guest.
A very special guest. This is our first ever returning guest.
Second appearance,
like
baby.
Columbus went
Second
back,
appearance.
He went back to Spain, but then returned to America several times. Never actually got to the continent, but he returned several times. So will our guest today return for the second time. I'd like to introduce the one, the only, the incredible, the immaculate, Alan True.
Woo! It's a beautiful intro. I'm actually here for something else, so it sounds like you guys, like the last one was so good that you had to bring me back, but really I just happened to be here.
Yeah.
Don't tell us that.
But I'm happy to be here. And I don't know how I feel about being compared to Columbus.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to be compared to Columbus.
He was Italian.
Kip is more like Columbus than anyone else. Yeah.
I thought he was Spanish. He wasn't Spanish.
No, he was Italian. He worked he basically couldn't get funding where he was at. So then he was like, "Oh, the Spanish though, they will fund me," you know?
Yeah.
And so they did, and hence he came over here and he got him a lot of gold.
So it's Spain's fault.
It is Spain's fault. But often Columbus, Italian fests and cities are often based around Columbus Day because he's their hero.
I didn't realize that. Kip told me that maybe a week ago. It was news to me.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of groundswell of controversy there that he's considered a hero? I mean, are there like Italian people that would be against that at all?
I don't think Italian people really care that much. I think the holiday was basically given to appease Italians. There was some lynching of Italians that went on in like the early 1900s before they were considered white, much like the Irish on the American census in like the 1910s, 1920s, before, I think in the 30s when it finally switched, you'd write white, Italian, Irish, Asian, Hispanic, whatever you were. But those two were separated out. But eventually, like, this always happens in the census, as it's happened throughout history, when a minority group becomes a dominant group number-wise, they get adopted into white. And that's what's happening in the U.S. census right now, is we've broke Hispanic into two groups now.
Yeah.
So when you fill out the census, you can do Hispanic white or Hispanic
non-white.
Non-white. And so slowly but surely, we're making the white people go, or the Hispanic people become white people.
I never really understood why that, like the Italian thing I kind of get, just because Italy goes so far down, it practically touches Africa at the bottom of it. And like Italians sometimes look, you know, like sort of a little bit Mediterranean as opposed to, you know, Scandinavian blonde Vikings. Right. But I never understood why Irish people weren't considered white. They're so white. They're the whitest people that have ever existed. Why were the Irish not considered white?
Well, I think one of the reasons was because they were Catholic. Okay. And that was like a big division. I think also that they were... it wasn't so much that they weren't white in the way we think about it today, but that they were like non... like native. You know, and I don't mean native like Native American. I mean like native to the country.
But everybody was an immigrant. I mean, it just seems odd to me, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because it's probably true, the Catholic thing, but of course that's religious and not, you know, racial.
Well, you acknowledging that everybody at one point was an immigrant is more intelligent of a thought than probably a lot of people.
Right, would actually.
Yeah. I think it's odd. Maybe it's the ginger thing. That's probably what it is.
I didn't know that white people had a farm system. That's cool. You guys have like AAA, and then you're like, oh, Hispanics are big enough now. We can call them up to the majors.
Is literally what it is. He's talking about like a sports metaphor.
Okay. Like a deal. You guys have a developmental league.
Exactly. We have a developmental league. Yeah. To get it. So actually, I think most, in this country at least, the average Asian American is doing better than the average white American. Something I've heard before.
I've heard the level of like, poverty for Asians is higher, and the level of like basically rich folks is higher as well.
Yeah.
It's more I think it's basically you come from Asia, say you're not educated, and you have to move to like, you know, Chinatown and live kind of in a not great area, or you've been here a while and you go to a great college and you're successful.
Well, I think it has to be-
or you force your kids to go to a really nice college and they get really rich and you continue to mind your store in Chinatown. That's the division.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember when I read a study on this one time, it was like a couple of years ago, it was saying that basically each generation does better. You know what I mean? So the big kind of, basically the people who are the descendants of like the railroad workers tend to be in that richer class. And the folks who came in the 70s, 80s, and came from maybe like being refugees, you know, at one point in the last 30 years, tend to not be doing better.
That makes sense. So I'm sure that's the same pattern I would imagine that the Italians and Irish and everyone else followed.
Yeah, so anyway, but speaking of oppression,
Keith,
that brings us to our topic today, which is, you know, frankly, the vegans' oppression of me as a meat eater. I feel like I've been a victim of this for such a long time. No, I'm just kidding, of course. What we're actually going to be talking about today is veganism.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a live vegan. Most people, I think, from listening to the podcast would think it's Keith, but it's not. He hates animals with a passion.
I kill him in my free time.
He kills him in his free time. No, Alan, true, is a vegan, recently converted. Am I right on this, Alan?
Since January, so it's been half a year.
Were you a vegetarian before becoming a vegan?
I was a kind of a bad vegetarian, I'd say. I was a vegetarian like a vegetarian 5 days a week.
I'm not that far off from that, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think about it. I try to be healthy, which to me means mostly eating fruits and veggies and then a little bit of meat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I roll.
Okay, so that's basically what we're going to be talking about today, is being a vegan and the ideas of being a vegan, and whether we'll get into the ethics of being a vegan, maybe the morality of it a little bit. And then I think kind of the other side of it is kind of like, I think some of the schmoozing or the bouginess of maybe being a vegan too. There's a piece to that too.
If you're starving, you're going to eat meat.
Yeah, and I think to me, like, I'm not like, I think even though I'm from a very like deer hunting place in the world originally, I'm pretty open to this. Like, I could see Alan converting me at some point. I could see like getting pushed over the edge for that.
But let's,
I'm kind of there already.
But let's start with the fact that you lived with me and you went to college with me for 4 years, and I'm probably one of the last people that you would think. We've had many a late night pizza, and we grilled a lot of burgers, and I ate a lot of meat at the fresh food company.
Yeah, a lot of chicken patties. A
lot of chicken patties. You're right. That was my thing.
Right. So, yeah, I guess I'm not that surprised, though, because I've always viewed you as a person who, like, gets into things. You know, so it's not surprising, like, this is the thing you're kind of into. Like, I think every time I've ever interacted with you, you've been, like boxing. For example, you're like, hey, I've been really getting into boxing lately. And then you kind of get into, you do the thing for a while. You kind of get an intermittent level of skill with it. And then you're on to your next thing.
Sure.
That's kind of your style of being. So I
keep those things, though. I think this one's not going away.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. It's in some sense belittling to say, oh, well, you're a vegan now. But when is your next thing going to come? But you think you're gonna stay with this?
Yeah, I do. I think that if I wanted to bail on it, I would have done it already.
Yeah. Was it brewing for years? Were you thinking maybe someday I'm going to try veganism?
Zero. No. Absolutely no thought to it at all. Even becoming vegetarian. In fact, I had seen one of my old girlfriends, you probably remember, who was vegetarian.
Yeah, what's her name?
Brianne.
Thanks. Let's change topics. Let's talk about Brianne instead of veganism.
I shouldn't even say girlfriend. She wasn't really my girlfriend. Yeah. It's a very
complicated.
Like, we were the reason Facebook invented the "it's complicated" thing. Yeah. Yeah, I shouldn't even say that.
Why you gotta make it so complicated?
So she said, "It's funny that you're vegan now because you used to make fun of me." Mm-hmm. For being vegetarian. I was like, I did not. And she's like, you absolutely did.
Yeah.
You made fun of me and your friend Kale, who was vegetarian. You made fun of us endlessly. And I was
his name was the healthy green plant you eat? His name was Kale?
Yeah, his name was Kale.
Wow.
That's a healthy man.
He's not vegetarian anymore, though. So that's...
What happened?
He changed his last name.
His name's now Matt Beef.
Yeah,
Cocky Beef.
But then I thought about it, right? And I said, I actually probably did make fun of you, and I feel bad.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, what is
no, okay, no, well, never you, had never had thought about it.
Never had thought about it. What do you think it was that at that time that you were making fun of? Well, like, you know what I mean, because you can adopt that state of mind, you know.
I think you make fun of anything that you don't understand, right? And you make fun of things that you don't understand that are different from you. That's the same reason that boys make fun of girls when they're five.
Yeah.
Or you make fun of the kid that wears glasses.
Yeah.
And it was just me being immature. But so I was making fun of them being different, and also that I thought they were being, like we just said, bougie. I thought they were kind of like our noses in the air at you.
Yeah.
We're going to do this to be... cool. We're going to do this to be hip and new age, because I didn't really understand the other reasons why you would do that.
Right.
You just seem kind of sissy in a way.
A little. It was funny. I have a story because we went to a bachelor party recently, Kale and myself, and we went to a barbecue place and they're just bringing out troughs of whatever. And I'm like, oh, the black bean burger, you know? And then Matt orders he ordered a twisted tea. And it came out with a little piece of fruit on it.
Yeah.
And in our friend group, no one would think twice of it, but we were with a much larger group, and immediately they were like, look at Matt and his little homo drink. And I was like, people still do that?
Yeah.
You know, like, people still associate that with, like, your sexual orientation. So I had never associated with being a sissy, but a lot of people do. I still get that now. Like, aren't you worried your son's like, how's your son going to have any toughness? How is he going to play football? You know, like he's, you're raising him as a vegan. How is he going to play sports? I'm like, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. I wouldn't worry. I don't think that it's almost the idea of, like, if you eat meat, that somehow makes you more masculine. Or if you eat, like, you know, certain foods or something.
Yeah, putting giant salamis in your mouth is definitely the way to be more masculine.
Yeah.
And you're raising your son to be vegan as well?
Mostly.
Kind of by de facto, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, he when he's with his grandparents or other people and they want to feed him cheese or he wants to... I want him to be able to experience everything.
Yeah.
So I want him to try meat, actually. I want him to have all of those things. But he's very largely vegan, and we're going to encourage that without beating into his head. His mom is much stronger about, like, he can't have any of that. I'm like, let him have a little piece of turkey here and there. It's not going to not gonna kill him.
Do you feel like, so your wife turned vegan first?
Yes.
Okay, do you feel like that influenced you then?
Yes. So the running joke with our friend group, everybody thinks that she forced me to be vegan. That's definitely not the case.
Yeah.
Because it was after. But it definitely influenced seeing her be able to do it, first of all. Seeing a lot of the literature and the movies and things that she had been watching and brought in to. And she definitely encouraged it. And then also, you know, eating some of the food in solidarity for her. Like, I'm not going to eat this Philly cheesesteak in front of you while you have your quinoa burger. Right. I started to eat like her a little bit more, and I started to be like, you know what, this isn't that bad, and I do feel better, and I know I'm being healthier.
Yeah,
maybe I should give this a shot.
Okay, I guess what I'm curious about though is what were her reasons originally for? Is it like an animal rights thing with her? Or is it like it doesn't like how meat tastes?
How I would describe it for me and her is almost every possible reason. But the reasons are, number one, definitely ethics on what they generally do to the meat that ends up on your table, how those animals are treated. Definitely health, you know, as far as lowering heart disease, lowering risk of cancer and those things. I mean, you're still prone to those things. It can happen, but lowering risk of that. Environmental, all of the resources that go towards raising giant cattle,
the methane they produce alone is like terrible for the environment. Like just them farting and shitting. Yeah,
it seems impossible, but I've heard that too. I guess it's just like such a crazy amount of cattle out there.
I believe it.
I mean, and the amount of water that's being used.
That's a huge thing too. 50%
of the water in the country is used for raising food.
Like, really? For animals?
For animals. Raising animals as food. And so, you know, if we can cut out some of that, California may not dry up. So that, you know, those reasons. And then, you know, our own, obviously, physical health, just being in better shape, feeling better. When you have a child to deal with, like we do, a young child, I think any little bit of energy boost you can give yourself, the better. And I really did notice a difference. I didn't notice the difference when I cut out meat, when I went vegetarian. I noticed more of a difference going from vegetarian to vegan.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of shocking to me to hear that. That's
shocking to me too. How do you know, because we are scientists, right, Keith?
Of course.
We claim to be. Some would call it soft scientists, but I've been working out and I'm getting harder.
You're hard as a rock.
Yeah, mostly in my delts. But, how do you know that it's not a placebo effect? Or do you not know? I mean, because I think that there would be, like, if I change something, like when I know when I stopped drinking soda, I felt different, you know, right away. And I think science would kind of back that up, that, like, I'm putting a lot less shit in my body, so it works out. But I would wonder if there would be, I don't know how much of that was just in my head versus how much, and it doesn't matter. I mean, maybe it doesn't matter either.
I think that having, like I said, having crossed one barrier from going vegetarian and just waiting for something to happen, like, when am I going to feel this, you know, and it never happening. I stuck with it because I believed in the other benefits of it and, you know, actually like seeing myself like dropping weight, you know, clothes fitting differently. I was like, oh, something's happening, but I don't feel any different. When you have a child that wakes up every night and you're up late at night and you wake up the next day and you're just dead. When it finally clicks and you're like, I am going to make it through today. And it continues. The only thing that changed was diet. He's still a terrible sleeper. And I feel a lot better. So I don't know. But I'm not going to tip the boat too much there.
Yeah. So it sounds like for you, it has to do mostly with diet and feeling better.
It doesn't, though. That's one of the things that keeps me going with it. But as far as starting out, a lot of it was ethical. A lot of it was seeing the process that gets meat to you, but also the process that gets milk to you is even worse.
Yeah.
And that was what shocked me and what made me go from vegetarian to vegan was my wife had kind of been on this, well, you know, if you're vegetarian, you really should be vegan. She's like, I feel like if I'm vegetarian, I should be vegan because all of the same reasons that I don't eat meat, all of those same things happen to the cows that produce milk. Mm-hmm. It's actually worse. They get artificially inseminated, so they keep having babies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then they rip those babies away from them, and the milk that those babies would be getting goes to you, and those babies are made into veal. Damn. So it's almost worse than it's almost worse than what they do to, like, I'd eat perch before I drank milk.
Yeah. So I guess, Alan, I guess what a lot of maybe people would like, maybe more like, you know, you've got, you're gonna have your standard hick who's like, well, I don't give a shit, right? Like about like animals, like fuck cows, you know what I mean? But then I think there's a more sophisticated argument, and me and Keith were talking about this with a couple other friends the other day, like maybe like 2 months ago or something, which is, do those cows even have consciousness? Or are they kind of just stimulus response?
Well, they definitely have like consciousness, well, right? But maybe it's just not at the level that matters.
I think, yeah, exactly, yeah. Like at the level
matters. I think when you see when you watch these videos and you see a calf getting like screeching, getting dragged away from its mother, and then you see it get a bolt put through its head, I think it's clear that they do have some level of consciousness. And also, I'm not sure that it matters to me, personally. I think that it's still humans doing something awful to a living being. And then, beyond that, are all the other reasons we talked about for doing it. So, anytime I get, you know, anytime I think about that, like, well, does, you know, does that animal really feel that? Well, there's a million other reasons, I think, that to keep going with it. But I do definitely think that those animals are feeling something. I mean, you watch the response that they
get. Well, and I'm not saying they don't feel something. I'm saying, though, that if you, from, like, a psychological standpoint, technically consciousness is just kind of a, like, if you go purely neuroscience perspective, consciousness is really just an illusion. Like, we are responding. We know that if we put you in an environment, we surround you with the right amount of chemicals, all kinds of things. We can pretty much get you to do anything. Like, pretty much any person, right? There's no, like, free will. We are products of our environment, our past experiences based on, you know, what basically happens is you see something that scares you. It affects your amygdala in your brain. Then you remember that and you avoid that in the future. You get pleasure from something. You go toward it in the future. And then you times that by a million interactions every day. And that's a person.
Did you really mean to say there's no free will?
Well, I would say that from a purely like neurological perspective, like our good friend Sam Harris, right? That's his perspective. Like, is that you pretty much don't have any type of free will. Okay. So I think what maybe that argument against it would be is that when you're putting the bolt through the thing, it's the exact same thing as like lighting a leaf on fire or something, because it's really just stopping a chemical reaction from happening.
Well, the bolt may not be really, the bolt really isn't what I have the issue with. It's everything else that leads up to that.
Right.
And the bolt is one part of it. Right. It's, you know, sometimes they just throw them in a tank of scalding hot water.
Yeah.
And there's other things that don't necessarily involve the animal that is more about what you're putting in your body. Like a lot of these animals get sick, but hey, we already spent all this money and feed building up this cow to be food for somebody, right? So let's put it on the truck anyway, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, the bolt, I can see what you're saying, but the bolt isn't actually the piece of that process that I would take the most issue with.
Right. And I don't think I'm any necessarily, but I didn't mean to put so much emphasis on that exact thing, but just the whole idea that it, from that perspective, from the neuro perspective, it would be the same thing as like drinking water, destroying like a piece of material, like this table that's next to us, like burning it. Because there's nothing, there's no living thing there. In essence, it really is just this product of chemical interactions going on inside a piece of meat in the head or whatever.
Well, I mean, you would certainly say the same about a dog. But of course, you wouldn't ever consider hurting your dog.
Or a human.
Exactly.
So, I mean, what?
This isn't Kip's argument. I'm just saying this would be the argument.
What is your argument? What is your opinion on that?
Well, like I said, I'm pretty open to it. I don't want to see anything in pain. You know what I mean? And I have the gift of being completely ignorant to it, that I don't have to see the farm. Uh-huh. And as a result, I get to kind of ignore it.
But do you think it really is like like you gave the example of burning a leaf or something that? Do you think that's a fair comparison, or do you not agree with that?
I would say I probably don't agree with it, but I'm also acknowledging that I'm pretty ignorant in the realm of neuroscience, you know, and really understanding that my thoughts in my head that I think are totally mine really are just chemicals kind of firing around, and they're really no different than hydrogen burning in the sun, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting to learn that stuff, but then once I know it, I feel like it leaves you, like, in a really shitty place to, like, yeah. like yeah, judge stuff.
But
yeah.
what about the calf, right? What about that response of being ripped away from its mother, which is the most natural, one of the most natural yeah. processes in the world, right, is the something being born and then being attached to its mother.
Yeah.
Right. And then humans immediately interrupting that.
Right.
Like, that's something that I think my wife, having just had a baby, yeah. That really tugged at the heartstring.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem so crazy to me to just say, like, we are, like, a mammal, and it's kind of hippie bullshit, probably, but I sort yeah. of believe in it. Like, there just is a kind of, like, kinship there yeah. with other animals, and to see a baby taken away from its mother, I don't think it's completely illusory to feel, like, bad about that. I think there's something really, you know, happening there.
Right.
So I think it's good to follow that ethical, you know, impulse and to sort of extend the circle of kinship or, like, your tribe, even to, like, the animal kingdom yeah. and protect animals. I think it's a good thing. It's an ethical thing.
But I would say, like, in your example with, like, your wife having a baby and then, like, how that makes the cow thing extra sad for you. And I think I've seen the video you're talking about where the baby is getting, like, pulled away and, like, thrown on the truck.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin is yeah. narrating in it.
Okay, so that video, like, some would argue, again, not Kip, just for the sake of debate, would argue that that's actually you projecting a consciousness onto that cow. Like, you're projecting how you would feel as mm-hmm. a sophisticated human onto that animal. Like, that cow is going to sit home and think about its baby calf that got torn away in the same way you would if something happened, you know?
Well, I think the sympathy is more towards the calf, right? Because the calf right. is the one that's exhibiting all of the response. The calf is right. the one that's going like, right, as it's right. being dragged yeah. away.
You could even compare it to a baby human who doesn't have the ability to talk and isn't sort of fully formed, being ripped away from its mother and, like, squealing in the same manner. Like, yeah. in that case, you would feel completely okay saying, right. no, this is bad, you need to return it to its mother. So what's the difference, in a sense?
But where I think I'm not projecting is that I know what would happen if that calf hadn't got ripped away. It would have immediately gone to its mother and yeah. laid underneath its mother and nursed for the next week or however long yeah. that particular animal does it. I mean, that's right. the absolute, like I said, that's the absolute most natural thing
right.
that animals do. So in that sense, I feel comfortable with that projection because I feel pretty comfortable knowing what was going on there or right. what was going to happen.
Yeah, where I think the thing comes in is more like, even if these are things, and they're not animals, and they don't have consciousness in the same way, I think I still believe, like, okay, how do we want to interact with them in the world? Because even if I am projecting mm-hmm. onto this animal, like, oh, I wouldn't want that to happen to me.
Which certainly you are to some extent.
Right, exactly. I mean, is that a bad thing? I don't know. I mean, do we want to live in a world where we mistreat the things around us that could give us some joy, you know?
Sure.
So I mean,
and like I said, beyond that debate, like, even if you don't yeah, buy that reason, right. well, then it's like, if you like this country, if you like the world,
yeah,
there's some other, you know, reasons yeah. to
right.
to consider it.
Right. Yeah, it really does boil down to this pretty stark division between, is, do you only really consider consciousness what human beings have? So anything that's identical to the way that you yourself coincidentally happen to think and see the world, like, is that worth protecting? Or do you open that up to, like, a much larger pool?
Right.
It's a pretty giant
division. I wrestle with that all the time because, like, that whole scenario that we just described bothers me, right? But, you know, what they do to shrimp, I don't really care. You know, yeah. like, if you put shrimp in front of me right now and said you had to eat this, I'd eat shrimp before I drank milk. Right. But, so why do I...
Yeah.
I know there's a psychological reason for this. I took some rudimentary psychology yeah. classes that I know why I care more about a cow than I do a shrimp. Mm-hmm. But, so I wrestle with that sometimes with...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember, I had this high school chemistry professor named Keith, actually, yeah. which is one of the few people I've met in my life named Keith.
Are you sure you're not just projecting on
me? I probably am a little bit.
You were really just sitting in a room rocking.
In a white room by myself.
Keith
Cook. I can picture him, like, really clear in my head. But anyways, he was really, you know, nerdy, kind of had a high pitched voice, kind of like this. And people didn't like him, but I sort of did. I could tell he was a nice guy. He was just not, like, he wasn't jiving with teenagers, which I liked because he seemed like a real adult or something. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he made a joke about, like, you hypocritical vegetarians, you don't eat meat, but you eat plants. And that was a joke. And I thought about it, and I sort of knew what he meant, though, because strictly speaking, plants are living things, too. Yeah. But they're so far away from humans. You would never really extend our, you know, whatever, that boundary to plants. You have no problem chopping up an asparagus.
Yeah. But also, you know, plants are naturally occurring, right? And so are animals. So, but like, we feel differently about fish that is line caught or animals that are hunted.
Yeah.
Than we do animals that are manufactured for their sole purpose is to be slaughtered for food. Right. So that would kind of go into that argument with where, like, I see a plant the same way I'd see, like, if we had to go hunt down something to eat, an animal to eat. Yeah. That's different. I think it's the process of humans interrupting nature to make more food for ourselves that we don't really need.
Yeah. I sometimes, one of the things you said earlier, kind of, Alan, and I think is kind of the hippy-dippy, crunchy granola argument, is often that it's, like, more natural to maybe eat, like, these other things. But, I mean, is there anything more natural than, like, one animal hunting down another animal?
Yeah,
or like... one human, like, if a human was, like, out in the wild and it, like, came, like, could kill a deer and eat it, it would.
Like, I remember watching some National Geographic show and they showed all these lionesses, like, three or four female lions, just like eating a baby elephant or maybe like a teenager elephant. Mm-hmm. And they were just like shredding off pieces of the body, you know, while it was alive. And the elephant is just like crying and freaking out. And they just ate it alive. I remember thinking that's like the, I mean, needless to say, that's nature. That's like totally natural, totally organic.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not as if Mother Nature is like
Two things here is number one, again, I completely agree with that. But at the same time, what's not natural is what we do.
Exactly, like, what we really do.
What we really do for food these days. So when people say that, like, well, you know, cavemen ate animals. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, they didn't inject those animals full of synthetic hormones and stuff
and
like that.
Cavemen also took a shit like from 20 feet from their cave that they lived in.
And there's also tons of things that cavemen did that we don't currently do. And the other side of that argument is, that is what makes us different than a lion, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if a lion's also, like, if I was just a feral creature, I wouldn't be married. I would be out there trying to spread my DNA around as much as possible. I would do all kinds of horrible things if I was a feral creature. So to say that, like, oh, it's, you know, lions eat zebras, so we should eat this burger, like, that argument falls short for me because of that. Like, there's all kinds of animalistic instincts that I repress every day.
Yeah.
And one of those things happens to be eating that burger.
Yeah, well put. I mean, like, with the ascension of being human comes all these ethical, what is it, with great something with great responsibility.
Uncle Grand power comes great responsibility.
Human beings can put a man on the moon. We have great power. We can do all sorts of stuff. But we can't,
I don't know. Ben said that, right? And then he started a line of long grain rice, vegetarian and vegan, by the way.
And then what happened, Uncle Ben?
Oh, God.
And then what happened, Uncle Ben?
He got shot by someone stronger.
everyone understand, they ate him.
They ate him and harvested him for dairy.
Do you think there was a kind of, I just think about how health conscious we all are compared to, say, like the 70s, where you could just like bathe in bacon and do whatever the hell you wanted. Why is that? Do you think there's a natural kind of like a trajectory that society goes on, whereas it becomes more, whatever, scientifically literate and thoughtful, or becomes more thoughtful and more aware of diet?
I hope so. I hope it's not just this hip thing. You know, I hope it's not just like, oh, we're going to do hot yoga and we're going to eat vegan, we're going to be vegan, and then in a couple of years it's just another fad that's gone away.
And I think unfortunately it is. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be gone, I have no idea. But I'm saying that's how it's viewed by the public, is often that it's the new gluten-free, which is the new, you know, it's a vegan, which is a vegetarian, which is like the, you know, there's 57 different diets that people have been on. And I think people often view it as this like a trendy thing as opposed to like an ethical thing.
Yeah.
You know, also, I also think that sadly, a lot of times people are using it as like basically kind of a narcissistic way. It's like, I want to lose weight and I want to look good. So this is going to be my way of doing that, as opposed to doing it for like more humanitarian reasons.
Sure.
You know, it's about a body image thing. I'm not saying that's bad. It's good to be healthier. But sometimes people, I think, are dressing it up as like an ethical thing when really it's about being sexier.
The large, and you know, since I've been vegan, it's kind of funny. I've kind of attached myself to any group or people because it's hard to be like in the minority.
Yeah.
And especially with something like this where everybody around me is constantly eating meat and posting pictures of this, and then I post a picture of it, whatever I'm eating, and they're like,
quinoa salad.
Like, keep that shit to yourself, you know, you arrogant. Like, whoa, you know. So we've and I think a lot of the people that I've met, at least, have very legitimate reasons. But I think you have to, when you live where we live, like in Grand Rapids, if you have to be all in, because it's not very easy. Mm-hmm. When I was in LA, everybody out there, like, people are, the vegan restaurants are full of people, and I don't think all of those people are necessarily vegan. And I even saw Jay-Z and Beyonce went vegan for 21 days, and that was and we, you know, we talk about it, we think that's good. Yeah. But it's still like, it's not something, we don't believe in it as something that you just, it's not like you give up carbs for Lent or something. Right. You know, we don't see it that way. We see it as a lifestyle change. Right. So we kind of have some mixed feelings about that.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of, we did an episode on hipsters too. And I think it kind of alludes to something we talked about, the hipsters and like listening to the vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, as it's like, are you listening to the vinyl because you appreciate the sound and you want the experience and you like the packaging? Or are you listening to the vinyl so that when friends come over, you could say like, look how hip I am. I have this vinyl like collection. Don't you guys all want to look at this and talk about it and listen to me talk about my vinyl?
How cool. Yeah. How cool am I?
So essentially, are you listening to the vinyl by yourself at home? Or do you only do it when people come over? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it falls into that same camp, unfortunately.
I think it does. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that, as I get more invested in it myself, at first I was like, I don't care. I'm just going to eat what I eat. Yeah. And everything, you know, but the more that I am into the cause, the more I'm kind of like, these people are kind of killing my cause here. Yeah. You know, so it's I've evolved that way too in the last few months.
Do you feel a real kinship when you meet other vegans?
I think I feel it more than they do because I'm new. Because when you first show up somewhere, you know, like here, I'm sure when you move down, you're like, you're from Michigan?
Yeah.
Me too, you know?
You know, like, I'm still kind of to... like that.
Yeah, he is like
that. Yeah. So that's kind of how it was. And some of them are just like, yeah, what's the big deal? Especially when I'm out in like California, they're like, we're all vegan.
Yeah. You know? Who is it? Yeah. Well, for me, sometimes with the Michigan thing, it's like a safety thing. It's like, protect me from the Buckeyes.
Yeah, right, yeah. I'm special in Grand Rapids. When I go out to California and I'm an Asian vegan, I'm just I'm just another statistic.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I do feel, I'm just like, hey, you know, you too. What do you eat on a daily basis? Yeah,
help me.
You know, yeah. What do you put on the grill? So it's kind of one of those things.
What was the main, when you went from, you know, you said you felt a lot healthier becoming a vegan after being a vegetarian. What did that feel like?
Like I said, the biggest noticeable thing was energy. Was not dragging through the early part of the day where my son would wake up at 5:30 in the morning and I used to just like basically just like wade through the mud until he took his first nap and I would go back to sleep. And I stopped having to do that. I stopped having to nap with him. I stopped needing that. You know,
what do you think that was? Is it like extra sort of crap your body has to filter out?
I think part of it was that I was, like I said, I was a bad, unhealthy vegetarian. I wasn't vegetarian to necessarily be, I mean, you can be vegetarian and eat grilled cheese and French fries every day. And I was compensating for not eating meat by just filling my diet, I think, with cheese and fried food. And so I think maybe getting off that helped, but also just eating more natural stuff. My wife started juicing more. I started taking vitamins to try to make up for some of the things that you may lose in translation when you change your diet. I think all of that put together helped me increase my energy. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed that, and then I did, you know, I went down a couple of pant sizes since then. Mm-hmm. So that's noticeable.
So do you think if you'd been a better vegetarian, you would feel as healthy and as like energized as you do now? Or do you think there really is something unique about being a vegan that made it a difference?
It's possible that I would, but I also think I know some vegetarians that have said, I have to give up cheese because it becomes such a crutch. Cheese becomes your crutch when you go vegetarian. That's your blanket. That's your Linus blanket where you're like, just put cheese on it and I'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that a lot of vegetarians would...
A
ton of quesadillas. Yeah.
Right.
Mounds.
Mushrooms
lots of,
would be mine. I would lean on mushrooms heavy.
Lots of cheese pizza.
Yeah.
Lots of cheese pizza.
Yeah.
You've got me interested now. You really do. I like the idea of being more energized.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it would make a big difference because I'm pretty healthy. You know, like I do the juicing or I make a bunch of smoothies with fruit in it. I probably should eat more veggies. But I mean, I'm pretty healthy. So I don't know if it would be the same dramatic shift.
So you can still be unhealthy as a vegan. I mean, you can eat French fries. That's true too. You can eat lots of potatoes. You can eat lots of bread. You can fill your body with a lot of starches and carbs. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried not to do that, but it's still, you know, every now and then.
It's tough, yeah.
Yeah, that's what, to me, I still need comfort food. And a lot of the time, that's what it is.
Right. So I think one of the other things that I think is really difficult, and maybe talking about two pieces of it, is kind of like the social class piece of being a vegan. And that my guess, and I haven't tried it, so I don't know, and I haven't put enough thought or anything to this, but would be that you have to have a significant amount of money in order to be vegan, because mm-hmm. you have to be able to buy certain foods and go to certain stores. Like, I think about, like, how much more expensive things are at, like, Whole Foods or, like, a Trader Joe's than they are at Walmart mm-hmm. or something like that. And so, to me, I think about, like, in the very blue-collar town that I grew up in, like, people eat a lot of meat, eat a lot of, like, quick food, you know, because they're working two jobs, or they're, you know, and they gotta get something really quick, or it's easier just to go get a pizza for the kids yep. than it is to come home and try to cook the meal and everything. So I think that there's a piece to it that is related to social class, and I think that's what a lot of people react to, is when somebody kind of says, like, oh, everybody should go vegan, it's like, yeah, that's great, I agree with you, but guess what, buddy? Like, I need to, like, live my life, and the day-to-day doesn't work for me.
All right, that's a loaded question. Let's see, where can I start here? I think the hardest thing for me about becoming vegan was the convenience of it, especially with me being on the road as much as I'm on the road, coming home late at night, sometimes the only thing available to me are fast food places.
Yeah, like Taco Bell.
But we did eat at Taco Bell 2 days. Taco Bell is extremely vegan-friendly. Yeah. Bean burritos. They'll make me crunch wraps with beans in them.
Yeah, that's cool.
They're very cool about it. The grocery stores are getting better and better. So when you say, like, something quick for the kid, mm-hmm. We have two places in town in Grand Rapids that will deliver pizzas to us that are vegan. We have microwavable, Amy's makes microwavable dinners. They make frozen pizzas. They make almost everything that's available to you before that, just in less quantity. You get two freezer sections instead of four aisles, mm-hmm. you know, so there's some of that. It is more expensive.
Yeah.
It's definitely more expensive. There's no sugarcoating that. I think in the long run, you would hope that you would recoup that money in health, right?
Right.
Since my son is 18 months old, he has never been sick, which is shocking for your first year of life.
But that's been because of your strong seed.
Oh, well, yeah. yes. I forgot about that.
Come on, Alan. Don't attribute that to the vegan.
I think that's what's keeping my wife healthy, too, is my seed.
Everybody, yeah, pretty much everybody. Just me being around
your whole, I was going to say, your whole friend group, yeah.
Yeah.
You can actually get some of my seed if you go to
audible.com/AlanSeed.
There's in there an episode where Butters does that. He saves...
South Park?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, maybe I should start saving mine in a jar. That would be selling snake oil.
Yeah, exactly. We shouldn't be doing that.
So there's... Okay, so there's...
Sell it as like a nice vegan paste.
No, it's not. It's not vegan. It's not vegan. It's animal product. I'm an animal.
Yeah,
my semen is not vegan.
Well, maybe that brings up an interesting point. And sorry, I didn't want to interrupt my question with another.
Is it whether my wife swallows because she's?
I was just thinking. Swallows delicious vegan pizza. I guarantee she does. Anyway, where I'm going to bring it is actually to this, which is if a farm were to behave more ethically toward animals. Like, let's say they were to only kill the animals when they were going to die, and it was, like, kind of euthanizing them at the end of their life. Mm-hmm. Or the cheese was, like, only made from, like, the excess milk from the cow.
You're talking about the old McDonald farm.
Old McDonald farm, right, where they're treating the animals ethically. Would you eat that food?
So, that's a very interesting question, because we've often discussed this. I think when people, you hear... when you go to restaurants now, a lot of the time they'll say, we use local turkey or we use local cheese. So the first thing I want to make clear is that doesn't guarantee anything, because just because the farm is around the corner from you and it's local doesn't mean that farm's not doing all of the horrible things we talked about. But there are a lot of farms that do things ethically. Mm. So the morality question comes in as... Well, the purpose of that farm is still raising animals for food, right? Which is unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still, in order to produce milk, they are still having to do some things there. They are still having to intervene into some of nature's processes.
But would that cow have a better life on that farm than it would be eaten would. By a so bobcat?
I think it just becomes where you personally draw your line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For me, I still draw the line past that. Mm-hmm. And it's also because it becomes a slippery slope of like, I'm just going to start eating this meat again. For me, it's easier to just go cold turkey. It's funny. And just completely not eat meat. You know, once I start letting myself say like, well, I'll eat this cheese or I'll eat hot turkey.
Well, why does it have to be so like black and white though? I mean, why couldn't you eat ethical cheese? You know what I mean? Why does it have to be like, you said a slippery slope, but what is the slope made out of? You know?
I think it's because you have to then research every piece of cheese that you're eating, and that's exhausting for me. And also, I've found that I don't need it.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily have a early on, I would say, like, I looked into it. I said, well, you know, Amish farms and this kind of. Mm-hmm. And I will say this too. One of our friends has, his parents have a farm, and they don't kill any of the animals. They're just their pets. Mm-hmm. And the chickens will just drop eggs naturally all the time. They're like, what do we do with these eggs? So they give us some of the eggs, and we eat those. Mm-hmm. Because those chickens aren't being raised for slaughter. They're pets. And so different.
Those eggs are not going to become chickens either, because they're probably unfertilized.
Yeah.
Right. I was just thinking about that. Yeah. I always thought an egg was like a little embryonic chicken that like, then I realized one day, no, if a rooster impregnates the chicken, like you have a little baby chicken, right? But
that would turn into a chicken. But chickens are laying eggs all the time
that are not.
That's their menstrual cycle.
And they just die.
Well, no,
the menstrual cycle. That's
the egg was never fertilized. It's just.
I shouldn't have said die. I just mean like break up and you know.
Yeah, in the same way that you know, I mean, it's just it. It would just be...
It's so weird to hear menstrual cycle. Well, but that is what it is.
Exactly what it is.
But again, and also for me, I make little... My wife's very strict about it. I'll make little concessions here and there. If I'm at a birthday party and this is the only thing they have there, you know, has some cheese on it, I'm not going to... So I think that's where people sometimes think that you have to be all in or all out.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be. I think if everybody... There was Jon Stewart had someone on the Daily Show recently, and he said if everybody just went a little more vegan, if you went vegan 2 days a week, it would make a tremendous difference in this country as far as environmental and a lot of. I think he gave a statistic about how much we would save in healthcare costs.
That's interesting. And,
stuff like that.
Yeah, I would think it would be super annoying to be in that situation to be vegan. Because the second you eat something or something, some people are like, oh, gotcha! Like, oh, did you know that had cheese in it? Or something like that. They're like, you fucking dick, I got you. And and they kind of assume that you're like going to be like, oh, God, let me throw up. And like, you know, try.
There is a certain amount of... people waiting for you to crack.
Yeah.
Because they want, I think a lot of people want to believe that like it's
impossible,
that it's harder than we make it seem. And that, I think a lot of people feel guilted or shamed into eating less meat because of, I think that's why some people don't like those videos that PETA puts out because they feel like they're being forced into something. But I think it's good to be aware of it, you know? Right. Like that for a while, I watched those videos and I was like, that's terrible, but I really like this chicken, you know? Like, and then it slowly changed my mind.
Yeah, I think that's where
mind.
I'm still at.
Like, yeah. I was there. I was there. So I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that. I am fully okay with the, look, I've looked at all the research you've shown me. I've watched all these videos. I can't do that in my life. Like, it's not convenient for me. Yeah. And I like the taste of meat. I'm actually more okay with that than the people who try to tell me that there's not an ethical problem or that the environmental numbers that these people present are exaggerated. Yeah. So the same people who say like an inconvenient truth is a bunch of crap. Ozone's fine, you know.
In one way, I mean, Alan, I appreciate you saying that. But in one way, I mean, when I think about myself, and I mean, I'm actually being more of an asshole in that situation because I'm saying I know this and I don't care. As opposed to at least if I was an idiot. At least if I was like, I don't believe it. This is hippie MSNBC bullshit you're trying to sell me. Like at least from that perspective, I'm coming from an ideology of, like, disbelief, but I've accepted it, And I still, I'm just still like, well...
It's more honorable to at least know your facts, though.
But you're also burying your head in the sand. That's what
I feel like I'm doing now is burying my head in the sand, because I know the danger's out there, but I keep doing it.
The pain of the animal makes the meat better. You're right, you've converted me, you're an asshole.
I am. I'm just saying that I appreciate what you're saying. Like, I get the personal, like, the interpersonal, because you're not having to go through the conflict with them. Like, you're like, you get it, at least.
So there's, right? I mean, there is a funny balance here too between like any time that you try to say anything about this cause, people mm-hmm. feel like people kind of are like, oh, the worst thing about people being vegan is having to hear about it.
Yeah.
When if you're like for us, we're constantly having advertisements for meat thrown at us or milk thrown at us or people posting pictures of this triple bypass burger they had in Cancun while on vacation, you know, and we don't say anything about that. It's fine. Yeah. But as soon as we say like, hey, you know, this might be better for you, then everyone's like, oh, get off and, you know, leave me alone.
Yeah. It's sort of like when white straight people are like, oh man, like, you don't have to be all up in my face with your gayness. Like, why do I have to see two guys kissing? It's like, well, they have to see straight people kiss in every format, like everywhere you go.
Right, exactly.
I never thought of it like that. That's pretty interesting.
It is. Yeah. It is. We get tired of like the, well, if kale tasted as good as bacon, you know, we get a lot of that. Or like, nothing makes a sandwich better than bacon. And we're like, oh God, you know, like it's, so we're constantly confronted with that. So there's an interesting line there that you have to walk between, like, I feel strongly enough about this that I want to bring it to people, especially friends of mine, where like, I feel better.
Yeah.
I think I look better. We're all healthier and the food tastes really good. So like, I want you guys to experience this and trying to help them understand that like, I'm not throwing something in your face. I'm not trying to force you to do anything.
Right.
I'm just, it'd be like if I said, here, Kip, try this beer I like. You might drink it and say, I hate this.
Yeah.
But I'm just giving you an option.
Right.
So that's kind of how I feel about it. But then there's also this other side where like vegans have this, there's like a couple, there's like different kinds. Like there's like super arrogant people that are kind of pushy. And then there's other people who are very passive and is like, just let people live their life. And I'm starting to be more like I feel sometimes like my wife's Professor X and I'm Magneto, where she's like, we must teach them our ways. And I'm like, we'll crush them and we'll force them to eat kale. like that's kind of, so we're sometimes, we almost started a blog where she was a vegan Professor X and I was a vegan Magneto. Then we remembered we had a kid. But that's kind of, we kind of have differing views on it, on whether, on how to even go about being vegan.
Yeah. I think, though, that the kind of the bougie kind of part has more to do with a personality than being a vegan. Because I think it's the same thing if that dickish, like, person who's trying to push it on you is doing anything. You know, sure. I think it has very little to do with it. And I think it also has to do with, like, the type of friends you have. So, for example, Alan, when I knew you were coming down to visit, me and my partner are immediately like, oh, cool, let's find a vegan restaurant and then let's try something we haven't tried before. Like, we're excited at the prospect of going to a restaurant we've never gone to before for the sake of, like, doing it, you know? So it's like us being open to the experience, I think, helps, you know what I mean? And just in the same way that you're like, I want to show you the experience, I'm like, I want the experience.
Yeah.
Versus I think some people are more like...
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, I just want to be able to take him to this restaurant because this is what we do.
See, and that's why, like, with some of my other friends, I'm like, let's just go to Chili's. I'll find something to eat.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that with you because I knew that you guys would be able to appreciate it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think I had meant to talk about this earlier when you asked that big long question.
The social class
question. I'm pretty sure that there is an all-vegan grocery store in Iron Mountain now.
Really?
Yeah, or it's somewhere near there. Because one of our friends lives in Trout Lake.
Yeah, I know where that is.
And her mom is vegan, and we're always like, that must be impossible.
Yeah.
It feels hard in Grand Rapids sometimes. It feels hard when I travel. We're like, how do you do that up there? And they order a lot, you know, and the power of Amazon.com.
Yeah, I believe it.
Order a lot of things. You order a lot of spirulina and nutritional yeast stuff.
The times they are changing. Amazon.com. Yeah.
I could see it. No, I mean, you could do it in Iron Mountain. I think it wouldn't be any harder anywhere else. To me, it would just be about, like, being basically having to use like relationships. Like I wouldn't be able to go through like the drive through at places. I'd probably have to go in and literally be like, listen, I know this is bizarre, but I don't want steak on the burrito.
See, but you used to do that at Taco Bell anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you wanted a different kind of cheese.
Yeah, Keith always like, when we go to like a Taco Bell or something like that, I have a very particular order. You've seen that as
well.
Like I want the Crunchwrap Supreme with the Dorito taco instead of the regular taco as the inside taco and no Baja sauce.
See,
we have to add nacho cheese. And I want the two soft tacos on the side, but I want them supreme.
It reminds me of the fancy people at Starbucks who can like rattle off like all this incredible stuff.
You and at Starbucks, I'm like that too.
You and I going into a Taco Bell now would be their worst goddamn nightmare. Our order would be terrible.
And I'm like, could you make my burrito just a little more vegan? I've heard on the Daily Show. Like, could you take off half the meat?
By the way, I can still eat Doritos, just not not the cheese ones. I can eat the spicy chili ones.
Are there any weird things that you were surprised to find out you couldn't eat?
Twinkies.
Why Twinkies? That's
a weird one, because the cream in a Twinkie comes from a meat product.
Yeah, Jell-O. Mm-hmm. Jell-O has animal bones in it.
What?
Yeah. Pretzel bread. It's got eggs in it. There's all those things. I was so disappointed. But then there's a number of things that I was like, what? Like Pillsbury Crescent Rolls, vegan.
Yeah.
Graham crackers, vegan. You know, there's a lot of things like that there. And there's a lot of wonderful websites that help you with these things.
That.
And that's made my life a lot easier, too.
Yeah, I think I'd be down. Like, I mean, that I really like the idea of being a little more vegan. I think that's
me
more
too.
Doable for me,
me
than,
too.
Than to be like, I'm going all in.
I've already kind of...
I don't want to live like that.
Already
I don't want to live
started,
so black and white.
Sure. I've already kind of started to do that. Like, I get soy milk in the morning. So all the milk... Or for the cream for the coffee is all soy cream or whatever, soy milk. I have eggs, though, in the morning. I like that. I'd stick with... I think that I'd keep eggs in my life.
And, I must say I miss eggs a little bit, yeah.
I'm a little confused at why not eat eggs, though. Because is it because of how the chickens are treated?
How the chickens are treated?
Like,
there's
I would
a lot
be okay with the local little farm, like your neighbor giving you eggs kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'll show you the video. There's actually a lot of sanitary concerns about it, because a lot of the chickens get sick because of the way that they're treated.
Yeah.
So you're, you know, there's that.
I believe that.
So when you say, like, cage-free, okay. But then what are they still, I mean, they're still cutting those chickens. They live a cage-free life, and they're still getting their necks cut at the end of that, right? So there's, I mean, like I said, it's just where you draw your line.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about, I read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and he was in prison, and I guess everybody wanted their pork or something, and he was starting to get these letters from, the Muslim Brotherhood, what was the, Kip, do you remember?
Who?
In Detroit, Malcolm X's, like kind of like Black Panther group.
Oh, yeah,
called them,
I don't...
Remember?
I thought they were Black Panthers, but...
No, it's a
different...
Well, that's an Egyptian thing. Nation of Islam. Thank you.
Way to go, Alan.
Nation of Islam.
Jeez.
And he was getting letters, and he was starting to be converted, like, slowly but surely.
Yeah.
And one day, he was, you know, in the lunch line, basically, and he didn't eat his pork, because he wasn't supposed to have pork. And, like, word spread around that, you know, he wasn't eating pork for whatever reason. And he didn't know why he wasn't doing it. He just was told not to do it, so he started not doing it. But somehow it was like liberating for him to refuse something. So like, you know, he's being administered this meat, but he's not having it. And it was a kind of like empowering thing for him, and it became a part of his identity.
I think it's become that way for me too. Like, I used to be like, oh, we're going to Super Bowl party, it's potluck, everybody's going to bring, so I'm going to cheat today and I'm going to eat these Doritos or whatever, this cheese dip. And then it became like, well, I want to show people that I'm really in this, and so it became more like if I'm gonna cheat, honestly, I'm gonna drive down to the Burger King by myself and I'm gonna eat a burger where no one can see me, because I'm almost ashamed of it now. But a couple of things I would say. Number one, if you're open to vegan food, you'll find, like, we just had a vegan pulled pork at a restaurant in Grand Rapids, and I had to call the guy out to make sure that it wasn't pulled pork. I was like, I think they accidentally gave us the real pulled pork. It was that good. I had crab cake the same way in LA, where I was like, this is crab, and they're like, no, it's not.
Yeah,
so, cool. And then you learn how to make those things. You look it up. The other thing is, I found that what's really helped me more than like meeting other vegans is going online and seeing which celebrities are vegan. How many NFL players are vegan? Bodybuilders, UFC fighters, boxers. And I look at those people and I'm like, well, if that guy's ripped out of his mind and he's playing 16 games in the NFL, or if, you know, Bill Clinton's a vegan, that's cool. Samuel Jackson
justifies it too.
Yeah.
If, you know, if an NFL player is doing it, it makes it like less lame.
Sure.
In a weird
way,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
That was one of the first things I did. I was like, I need to know. I need some solidarity here and Samuel L. Jackson. Okay, I can deal with that now. You know, yeah. Mike Tyson.
Mace Windu.
I can, yeah.
Well, some of these people, though, I was just thinking of Bill Clinton. I mean, he had like the heart attack and the bypass surgery, yeah. And so he had to do it not to die.
Well, my dad
the most, I would
my
say.
Dad had a heart attack last year,
oh, geez.
And wow. He had to switch up his diet, and it's much more vegan. And he was on a bunch of medication,
yeah.
And as soon as he went to more of a vegan diet, he was off his medication within the month.
Yeah, can I tell you one of the most fascinating things I ever learned in psychology school?
Yeah,
it has to do with that. Above anything else, above any changes you make after a heart attack, the number one thing above anything else that will reduce a heart attack, second heart attack from happening, is not food, it's not exercise, anything. The number one thing is learning stress management techniques.
Hmm.
Because even people who exercise, get on the medication, change their eating, they are still more likely to have a heart attack than somebody who learns stress management. So the professor I learned this from, who is one of the smartest psychologists I've ever met, his name is Alan King, he said, does that prove that heart attack is really a psychological disorder? Because the number one symptom has to do with your mental, like your mental state,
mm-hmm.
And the number one relapse thing has to do with your mental state. So his argument was essentially, a heart attack is a mental disorder, the number one treatment is a mental health treatment, above anything else.
This is like the Matrix, mind over matter, free yourself.
I mean, my dad smoked from like when he was a child, basically, yeah. Until he was in his 30s or 40s. I yeah. don't think that helped, but yeah, I also think not. That he's a very stressed out person. So yeah. We definitely yeah. think stress played a gigantic part yeah. of it.
Kip, stress is just like killer in general, isn't it? I mean, yeah. isn't it like a horrible thing for your body?
Well, essentially, you got to think of it like this. When your body kicks from that parasympathetic mode, like the autonomic, the nervous system kicks from the parasympathetic mode into the sympathetic mode, which is your fight and flight response.
Okay.
It's essentially like running an engine. It's like, you got to think of it like a teenage boy after he watched The Fast and the Furious and he's like driving home.
Yeah.
It's like he's just put, like the car is being, the gas is being pushed down and like you're driving faster and you're swerving all over the place. It's essentially the same thing to your body. When your body is constantly into that fight or flight mode, you are running your engine really, really hard. Mm. And that you're taking miles off the engine. So your heart is beating harder. So it's like getting a little bit more worn out. Your face is getting more wrinkly. Your hair is getting like grayer. Like the car is getting burned out quicker. And that has to do with like adrenaline, cortisol, and everything like that.
So we live in a very stressed out society, right? Which right. is probably why we have higher rates of heart disease. We right. also live in an unhealthy society,
right.
which doesn't help. You know, you're not going to be able to quit your job, or you're not going to be able to get your boss to not be breathing down your neck. I'm not going to be able to have my child
right.
be differently. So I combat that mm. with diet. I mean, it helps yeah. a little bit. If you're stressed out at work,
right.
Maybe replace that burger patty with yeah, a black bean.
You should.
With a black bean and quinoa
you
burger.
Probably should. And then also, your work should realize that if you're that stressed out at work, it should change the corporate culture and do cool things like Google does, where they have like, you know, free food and like you can eat healthy food throughout the day
yeah.
and you can exercise and you can finish your work whenever you want. You don't have to be there from 9 to 5.
Well,
and, you know.
Here's the crazy thing, right? My dad had his heart attack. I came in and visited him the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And for lunch, they brought him a giant bowl of macaroni and cheese.
Wow.
That was just that. That was all they gave him. And I said, he should really be eating this? They said, well, when he goes home, he shouldn't eat this. Maybe supplement that with like some protein. Like have a piece of ham. Have a piece of ham with your macaroni and cheese after right. you had a heart attack. This is what doctors are telling
yeah.
us. And it was the same thing where like I was involved with Laugh Fest, which is run by Gilda's Club, cancer treatment, and there's a lot of people that aren't healthy in there. Mm-hmm. And I would go to their dinners and I would see what they're feeding these people. And I was like, I really think they would feel better if you introduced them to like some green smoothies or,
yeah, right.
you know, some other things rather than I think that's part of our culture now is when we get together, let's throw some brats on the grill.
Yep.
Let's fry some stuff
beer,
up.
Which is terrible
drink
you,
some beer.
Right?
Like that's part of, and let's sit on the couch and watch a game. Like
yeah.
that's part of our culture.
And then watch commercials for the things we're eating.
Exactly. Yeah. And then look at that and go, that looks good. Let's go get Sonic after this game's
yeah.
over.
Yeah, I remember a sociologist I listened to one time said, this was like an online lecture or something, said the greatest trick like capitalism ever like pulled on people was getting you to sit down and watch commercials all weekend. So essentially what you're doing is all week you're being productive and feeding into capitalism, and then on the weekend you've been tricked into watching a little tiny bit of a football game, but having it spread out across 4 hours, so you are literally sitting there like, what can I consume?
Yeah.
Like, they have found a way to make you sit there and be advertised.
And it's not even that anymore, right? It's just, you look at your phone. There's an advertisement on my phone if I flip it open right now. Yeah. There's advertisements on the road. There's advertisements in everything.
Right.
There's an you're probably due for an advertisement. Where's that thing you got to read? We probably do right now.
Audibletrial.com/Midwestern. It's a cage-free audiobook.
Yeah.
It's organic.
Ironically organic.
It doesn't have any adverse effects on your ears.
Yeah, there's this guy named Douglas Rushkoff, I think, and he made a point of just saying, the television show is basically the space between the commercials to get you to keep watching the commercials. And that's the right way to think about it. I remember just being kind of struck by that, because it's totally true.
It's ruined football for me. Like, if you go to a football game, you're like, what am I doing here? Why am I sitting here right now? Like, oh, TV timeout. It's like, oh, another TV timeout. It's almost we're really happy because this team's about to punt, and on the change of possession, we can throw more ads at you. And it's like, holy cow, and they're projecting ads onto the field.
Yeah.
It's like ruining it.
And then you get even more triggered because you see the big sausage guys running. They're not vegan.
Yeah. Let's bring your kids down at halftime. We're going to dress them up as donuts, and they're going to do a three-legged race. Like,
all right, everybody. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Midwestern Social Sciences. Alan, do you have anything you want to plug really quick at the end here? Any comedy shows you got coming up?
You know, I don't. But okay. if you're more interested in being vegan, vegan.com and PETA.org itself will be out. You know, there's a fast food guide on there. If you go to a fast food restaurant, what do you order at Dunkin' Donuts? What do you order at this place and that place? Yeah. Very helpful. What do you buy at the grocery store? Yeah. So check out some of those websites.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get some recipes from you for some green smoothies after the podcast.
My wife will email them to you.
Yeah. All right.
She'll email them to anybody that listens to this podcast.
And if we wanted to get in touch with you and learn about your comedy, Alan, where would we go?
You can go to my website, alentrue.com, A-L-L-E-N-T-R-I-U.com. And my act is much funnier than anything I said on here today. There's not a single vegan joke in my whole act.
Not yet.
Not yet. I don't know.
All right, everybody. Thanks a lot, Alan. Thanks for stopping by. How'd you think the conversation went? Are you converted, Keith?
I'm converted. I'm going to go vegan for sure.
Are you serious?
No. Good. But maybe someday.
God, I'm glad that guy's gone. Now we can talk about it. Let's beat some beef jerky.
What if Alan really wasn't a vegan? He was just pretending to be vegan for his wife, and he just had, like, meat just hidden all over the house?
Well, that's like that movie, what the fuck movie is that? Heavyweights. He's got, like, food hidden, like, everywhere.
I love that movie.
That would be so funny. All right, everybody. That's it.
That's it for the week.
We're out of here. I'm Dr. Keith Pietrantonio.
This is Keith McIntosh, and we will see you next week, folks.
All right. Ciao.
Hey, guys. If you enjoyed the show, check out Kip and Keith on Facebook at Midwestern Social Scientists. You can also tweet them at hashtag Midwestern Social Scientists. Or you can check out their Podomatic page, which is the first place the episodes get released. Don't miss out. Yeah, just check out their Facebook, okay? Thanks.